Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In a music industry that's obsessed with the latest novelty, maybe there's still room for traditional values. As we've been hearing, the Memphis R&B label Stax, which brought us Isaac Hayes, as well as Sam and Dave, and Otis Redding, and the Staple Singers, and Booker T and the MGs, is being relaunched just in time for its golden anniversary. With the reactivated Stax comes a year of reissues and new signings. We'll get some more of the history of the label in a moment, but right now we're joined by Robert Smith. He is the Senior Vice President of Strategic Marketing at Concord Records, which bought Stax back in 2004. Robert, thanks for joining us today on Soundcheck.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So Billboard magazine recently had this cover story called Greatest Hits Compilations Are the Gifts That Keep on Giving. For the music business. Now, it's the 50th anniversary of Stax. It's this amazing body of work. Is that the ultimate gift for Concord Records?
It's the ultimate gift for music fans. We're hoping it's also a huge gift for Concord Records, but Stax has just always been such an important label, and it's really critical to carry that heritage forward. 50 years means a couple of things. You know, many of the fans of the music are really upper middle aged, and there's a whole population of younger music fans who know a lot of it from secondary sources, from sampling and from movies, and soundtracks, and TV shows. But the kind of core music that was created at Stax is like none other. And what we're really doing is it's never been a lot of the Stax music's never been out of print. But there is still an enormous amount of it that no one's heard. And what we're doing all through the year, but it's really meant to relaunch the label, is to both go into the Stax archives and do a lot of great deluxe packages, put out things that haven't been heard before or haven't been heard properly, and at the same time launch the label with a lot of new signings, which is really another critical part of it. I think in the current music world there are plenty of very quick and manufactured pop things, but what we really want to do is relaunch Stax as a great contemporary soul label.
Well,
Angie Stone signed to the label. You've just been speaking to Isaac Hayes. We're really excited about him doing a new record. Layla Hathaway. There are a number of artists being signed to Stax to do new records.
Well, now, Isaac Hayes, I mean, here's a guy who was part of Stax back in the day, you know, helped make the label what it was. Where does Angie Stone fit in? How do you kind of see or hear the Stax sound in the 21st century?
I think Angie Stone's been called the queen of neo soul, which I wouldn't even begin to try to define. But I think what she fits into the sense that she's really a true artist, not someone whose records are made with lots of production and lots of modern and technical effects. She's a great singer, a really great song stylist, and has a very kind of rootsy and authentic sound. So I think as an artist, she really fits. That's what always separated Stax from Motown and other labels, is that kind of rootsy, wonderfully authentic soul gospel sound.
I want to follow up on that in a minute, but let's hear a little bit from Angie Stone. Wish I Didn't Miss You is the name of the song. We're speaking with Robert Smith from Concord Records, which owns Stax and is relaunching it this year, and Angie Stone is one of their first signings.
Now you think it's funny. Now you wanna spend your money on girls that you forget.
So that is Angie Stone. Her next record will be on the legendary Stax record label, which is being relaunched this year just in time for its 50th anniversary. And we're speaking with Robert Smith, who's a senior vice president at Concord Records, which now owns Stax. Robert, you began to tell us that, you know, there is something that for you and probably for most of us separates the Stax sound from Motown or anything. I mean, how would you define the Stax sound, first of all, and what is it that makes it different specifically from Motown?
You know, I think you've got a guest on after me who's going to probably be able to do a much better job answering it. But there was a very organic growth of Stax Records. It really opened as a kind of neighborhood Southern label, which combined funk and soul and gospel and blues. Mm-hmm. Actually, funk was later. And the defining sound, the artists are actually all very different. I think Motown had one very distinct sound, which all the artists did. Stax was a collection of very unique artists, but all who came from a much kind of rootsier R&B background musically.
And kind of a grittier sound, an earthier
grittier
sound. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I think it was just, it combined. It was a biracial record label operating in the South in really an unusual fashion. And the artists, musicians brought so many different musical influences to bear that it just created something, I think, that is unique as a body.
Well, now, you're right that, you know, our next guest, Rob Bowman, will be able to talk more about sort of the history and how important the integration issue was. Let's talk about the current edition of Stax. There's been a lot of speculation about Justin Timberlake, another favorite son from the Memphis music scene, getting involved, that he's been in negotiations that would give him an active role in this. And I understand that if negotiations are still underway, you probably can't talk too specifically about it, but what's going on just broadly right now?
Nothing right now. Nothing I could talk about, but really, perhaps will happen. I truly don't know. And if it does, it'll be in a kind of separate way from the core of what we're doing here from Concord Music Group, where we're really focused on the great catalog of material and signing artists directly to Stax here.
Now, there is this incredible back catalog, and you alluded before to the fact that, you know, a lot of the people who grew up on this music are, you know, they're of an age and a generation where they're still buying records, you know.
Oh,
not downloading it off the internet, but going to brick and mortar stores and buying CDs.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, they are definitely the strongest CD buying slice of the audience. But more and more people gravitating towards downloading music. We're actually going to be putting a number of Stax titles that have never been out, well, since vinyl, as digital-only releases.
Yeah,
because
good.
What we found, even with some of our great old jazz records, that adults are downloading more music. You know, some of the things, like the box set, which is coming in mid-March, are the 50 greatest Stax hits that combines Atlantic and our Stax material for the first time, is an object you'd want to own. It comes in a box, and it's got a lenticular cover with the Snapping Finger logo, and it's an incredible collection.
And
but
there
are going to be so many things out that I think people will download some of it, buy some of it.
All right. Well, that Stax 50th anniversary celebration that you mentioned was co-produced by our next guest, Rob Bowman, who's now on the line with us. So, Robert Smith, let me say thank you to you. Robert Smith is Senior VP of Strategic Marketing at Concord Records, which owns Stax and is relaunching the label. Thanks very much for being with us this afternoon.
You're welcome. Pleasure.
And joining us on Soundcheck now is Rob Bowman. He is a professor of ethnomusicology and popular music at York University in Toronto. But he's also the author of Soulsville, USA, The Story of Stax Records. And as I say, has co-produced this 50th anniversary multi-CD set. Robert Smith was just telling us that, you know, Stax was kind of a gritty, Southern, soulful counterpart to Motown Records. I understand the label actually got started as a country label. Is that right?
Absolutely. Jim Stewart, the gentleman who started Stax Records, was a white country fiddler who, you know, was working at a bank in Memphis, Tennessee, and seeing the success that Sam Phillips was having at Sun Records with Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash, Roy Orbison, and so on, and thought, boy, this is going to be a whole lot more interesting than working in the bank. And it was started in his wife's uncle's garage as a country label. Jim was going to work logically with the music that he knew and understood. And the first 11 or so releases were all country or pop records, and with one exception, an incredible rockabilly record by Don Willis, most of them were fairly mediocre. And if it had stayed a country and pop label, we would not be talking about Stax now. But instead what happened to Jim was when he eventually got out of the garage, had a first studio sort of out in the country that he found nobody was willing to journey that far to, looked for a studio in the city. And he wanted either a church or an old movie theater because he wanted really high ceilings. He
wanted that acoustic, yeah.
He wanted that acoustic ambience where you get all his reverb. And he found an abandoned movie theater at the College of at the corner of College and McLemore in Memphis, in a neighborhood that had been white that was quickly turning black. Of course, it's a story in the inner city parts of much of America at that particular time in terms of that demographic shift. Now, you can imagine, you got this guy who's moved in, converting the theater into a recording studio. That's not a secret in the neighborhood. People figured that out pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got people knocking on the door going, "Hi, I sing," and they happen to be African-American. And, of course, Jim has got nowhere with country and pop. He's still intending on continuing in that direction, but he thinks, why not take a chance? And one of the guys knocking on his door was Rufus Thomas, who also happened to be a disc jockey on WDIA, one of the premier black stations in Memphis, one of the premier black stations in the United States then and now. And Jim reasoned that Rufus had recorded earlier for Sun, and it had a hit, actually, with a record called Bearcat, an answer record to Elvis Presley's Hound Dog. Rufus was a local DJ, so certainly he would get local radio support.
Mm-hmm.
What's there to lose by taking a chance? And he records Rufus with his daughter Carla Thomas on a record called 'Cause I Love You. 'Cause I Love You sells 30,000 copies locally. Now, in 1960, to Jim Stewart, who was close to being bankrupt, that's a massive number of records to sell. And in fact, Atlantic Records hears about this from their local distributor, Atlantic up in New York City, of course, and becomes interested in picking up this record for national distribution. So Jerry Wexler flies to Memphis, talks to Jim, gives him $5,000, which at that time must have looked like $10 million.
A prince's ransom, absolutely.
And suddenly Jim Stewart, as he puts it to me, it's like the light went off. He said, he's quite frank about it. He knew very little about black music. Like anybody who's heard Ray Charles do What Did I Say? But he really didn't have a clue. But he had stumbled onto something and intended to pursue it.
So this wasn't, it wasn't like, you know, there was some high-minded idea of racial harmony and we're going to put out this, you know, integrated front to the segregated South. It was good business.
Well, understand, it was fortuitous luck in some sense.
Yeah.
That this happened this way, but also understand that Rufus and Carla record, there wasn't a white person who played on it. It was not an integrated record. This is an all-black record being put out by a white record company owner. That's a standard story in America, of course. White owners, black labor.
Right.
This, though, quickly does change. When Jim Stewart decides to go with making black music with black artists, he very consciously develops an integrated company from the word go. So there was some thought process that became, okay, it was going to be a white thing, now it's going to be a black thing, but it's going to be an integrated thing. Now that starts at the level of the office staff. You know, one of his first two employees.
Right, but it's probably most, you know, I mean, it may start in the office staff, but again, as you said before, if it were just an office thing, we would not be talking about this label 50 years later. To put their house band, Booker T and the MGs, together, you know, an integrated band at that time, was a pretty remarkable thing. And in fact, Booker T and the MGs receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award as part of the upcoming Grammys. And this, of course, is their monster hit, Green Onions. Booker T and the MGs and Green Onions was a big hit for Stax Records and, of course, for this band. But Booker T and the MGs was kind of the house band at Stax there in Memphis. Once again, we're speaking with Rob Bowman, who is the author of the book Soulsville, USA, The Story of Stax Records. And we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of the label. The label's being relaunched. Rob, some of the early signings, you know, Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, Wilson Pickett, and of course, Isaac Hayes, with whom we spoke a little bit earlier. You know, at some point there did seem to be, whether it sort of coalesced by luck or by design, there seemed to be some kind of, you know, A&R, an artist and repertoire philosophy at work in Stax Records.
Well, once again, Jim Stewart discovers that soul music is the ticket. He quickly develops an identity to the label, and things tend to go in a circular fashion. Booker T and the MGs become the house band. They start at 3 blacks, 1 white. They become 2 blacks and 2 white by 64. The horn section is an amalgam of people that Jim had met through the location of the recording studio, as well as members of a group called the Marquees, which originally were an all-white band covering black material that two members of the MGs were part of. And we have this integrated ensemble who back up dozens and dozens and dozens of artists. You know, we put out a 9-CD box set in 1991, which was all the Stax A singles from the beginning of the label up through May 68, during the period where Atlantic distributed them. And I often speak of that box set. It was as if I could have put out a 9-CD Beatles box set where John, Paul, George, and Ringo back up 45 different artists.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Of course, given how good John, Paul, George, and Ringo were in coming up with ideas, writing songs, and playing as an ensemble, you have this organic, readily identifiable sound that, in the case of Booker T and the MGs and Stax, becomes the blueprint for Southern soul music.
All right, so they are the glue that holds all these disparate singers together, so to speak.
And they become the archetype for similar ensembles throughout the South. You get integrated bands now in Malaco, down in Jackson, Mississippi, Muscle Shoals, Alabama, Criteria in Florida. When you hear Aretha Franklin records in 67, 68, records like Respect and I've Never Loved a Man and Chain of Fools, there's nobody associated with Stax Records in the rhythm section. Aretha was not signed to Stax, but you're hearing the sound of Stax Records
right. Filtered
through non-Stax hands and vocal cords.
Now Rob, all right, you make a great case for how important and pervasive the influence of Stax was in the music industry, but in the final chapters of your book, you detail this kind of disaster that befalls the company, overdrawn bank accounts and, you know, the parent company, the distributor, unwilling to distribute it. How did the precipitous decline of Stax Records occur?
That's an incredibly complex question that took me about 12 years to unravel.
All right, but you got a Reader's Digest version of the answer for us?
this is the Reader's Digest version. Al Bell, who ended up co-owning Stax in 68 and eventually owned the whole label by 72, was all about expansion. Al Bell was a visionary individual, did lots of incredible things in terms of moving black music forward within the music industry at large. He felt that if he got a big major label, in this case Columbia Records, to distribute Stax, he would be able to move black artists and black product that was primarily selling to an African-American audience. He could perhaps cross-pollinate and sell in a big way to a white market.
As Isaac Hayes would then prove him right, you know?
And Isaac, you know, the idea of letting Isaac have that kind of freedom was Al's. Al co-produced that breakthrough album, Hot Buttered Soul.
Right.
But what happened?
How did it all go so wrong?
Well, partially getting Columbia to distribute him. You know, you could not, as an independent black label, get LPs and Macy's and Sears and places like that. Through Columbia, he could do that.
Yeah.
So this was his goal. Well, great. Seems like a marriage made in heaven. Clive Davis at Columbia likes the idea of getting Columbia into black music. The problem is, neither person had taken the time to realize they were dealing with very different corporate cultures.
Mm-hmm.
They did not function the same way. And this would take a long time to explain, so I won't go into the details. But in effect, Columbia was unable to sell Stax Records at the same level that Stax had been able to sell it pre their relationship.
Wow.
Not because there wasn't good product, but because they worked differently and could not respond to different regional things the way Stax could.
Well, let's see how Concord Records, which now, you know, since 2004, has owned the Stax catalog, let's see if they can fare any better. They're starting with a two-CD set, the Stax 50th Anniversary Celebration, co-produced by my guest Rob Bowman, who is also a professor at York University in Toronto and author of the book Soulsville, USA, The Story of Stax Records. Rob, thanks very much for joining us. I know it's going to be a busy year for you with the 50th anniversary, and good luck with all of that.
It'll be an exciting year, and thank you.
I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. I had nothing to live for. Looked like nothing's gonna come my way.
Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.